and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Good morning to the gentle people of the United States of America. Our hearts are with you in New Orleans. We're broadcasting live from the New York, from the New School here in New York City at the Tishman Auditorium. We're going to have New School President and former Senator Bob Kerrey joining us in a few minutes. Plus, Stephen Colbert from The Daily Show will be here in person. We're also giving away free coffee. So that ought to bring you down. Free coffee, New York. Free coffee at the New School. We're on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. Come on down. It's Mud Truck Coffee. So in about 3 minutes, I'm going to start hallucinating, Riley. Did you get your Mud Truck Coffee?
Yeah, I got it, man. It's good.
These people are going to have to work extra hard this morning because this is a big arena. And literally, there's 300 people here already, but you still, it's hard to hear them.
Yeah, it is. It's
you know, because they're laughing and they're whooping and they're hollering. And some guy who I don't even think is here at the auditorium just came by and dropped off the Bush stickers. Just the world can't wait, drive out the Bush regime. And then he left. I guess he had other stops. Six in the morning, it's big time for protest in New York City.
The Union Square isn't far from here. It's got a long history of protest.
There's probably three guys there already at Union Square going, come on, man, everybody out.
Yeah.
People,
yeah.
No one's up, just a guy cleaning the place. How you doing, Riley?
I'm doing great, man. How you doing?
I'm all right. You know, it's a little weird being on stage. I remember this looked like every lecture class I went to in college, actually. Actually, there's just this many people here. Now I know what it feels like to be one of those professors that's like, okay, here we go again. Let me try and act interested in what I'm telling you. But this is good. I'm glad you people are here, a couple of regulars. I'm a little worried about Rich Two Bagels. We had this one guy, Rich, who literally, I think, sweeps out in front of the place when we go to do a live performance. He's not here today. I'm concerned.
Think he got married?
No, I don't think Rich got married, but I would... I would be happy if Rich got married, but I feel that Rich might lead a sad, simple life somewhere, and I just want him to come down. Rich, if you're out there, we'll get you bagels.
We'll miss you, man.
We'll get you food. If it's about breakfast, Rich, please come down.
Come down.
So what's on the plate for today? We've got some updates from New Orleans. It seems that the receding floodwaters are revealing a lot of horror, but the floodwaters are down to about 60% there. They are continuing the cleanup. They have not had to force people out of their homes yet, though the police are still, out and about and deeply encouraging people to leave because it's time to go.
It's good news that they don't have to force people out. I think what we're seeing now is people coming to grips with the fact that staying in their homes will be dangerous and hazardous to their health. So I think when people come, they will go with them. And in some cases, there were just people who were staying in their homes because they were scared to do anything else but stay in their homes. Once people got to them in these house-to-house searches they're doing, they're more than happy to go. It was just that nobody came.
Let's be honest. I would stay in my home, too, for as long as possible, as long as I had something to drink and something to eat and there's some canned food or whatever, because when these people leave, there's no indication, given the nature of this administration, that they will return to having a home.
Exactly.
So I imagine that fear at the core of what's going on in their lives. I mean, this is an administration that on some level I believe is looking forward to moving as many people out of New Orleans as possible.
Yeah.
You know, and if this is the way it happened, then that's the way they feel it's going to have to happen. These people are looking ahead to redevelopment. I mean, Jesus, you know, Bush was on the radio. He got on TV, a few days after this thing and talked about how great it was going to be that Trent Lott's house was going to be rebuilt and he could sit on the porch and look at the pain from there.
Bush has been amazing during the course of all this. On the day that Katrina reached landfall, he had a conversation with Michael Chertoff, who, of course, is our Homeland Security czar from across the river in Jersey. They didn't talk about Katrina. They didn't talk about landfall. They talked about immigration. Why?
Yeah. Well, you know, this is the issue, that was stuck in my head last night as I laid in bed wondering if my wife was having sex with somebody.
Uh-oh.
I like to mix a little politics in there. When I'm in panic, I like to mix it up. You know, I create a full menu of panic. You know, I've got the world, the country, and what's my wife doing behind my back. Though she wasn't doing anything, as far as I can tell. She did call eventually. But it's all in my head. Jealousy is bad. Can I just put that out to the country? Jealousy is cancer. It's cancer of the mind. Now, moving back into the country, into domestic problems, where was I going with that exactly?
You can't help it.
Yeah. I know I was going somewhere, Riley. Oh,
This is the thing, is that there is an opening now. The Democrats have an opening, and it looks like at least Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid are stepping up and providing some leadership. This is a tremendous gap, this incompetence and the bungling of this situation. You know, if the obviously, Bush is down. His poll numbers stink. We're going to get on into those in just a second. But this is a great gap for the Democrats not only to be critical of what happened and to call attention to it, but to step up and lead. And certainly it seems like Pelosi is making some statements, Howard Dean is making some statements, and Harry Reid, though yesterday or the day before yesterday, he said, we've got to get to the bottom whether or not Bush's vacation had any hindering on the situation. Look, I got to tell you, Harry, the proof is out on that one. So maybe, you know, we could you know, move forward and really sort of, you know, take some leadership. And you told me this morning that they pulled out of the joint investigation.
Yeah, the joint House-Senate investigation of what happened with Katrina, which we told you about yesterday, is now going to be absent all Democrats. Both Democrats in the Senate and Democrats in the House have decided not to be on this committee. In other words, Reid and Pelosi, as the ranking Democrats in the House and the Senate, have said, we're not putting any of our people on this committee. That means it will be an all-Republican committee and have no validity.
This is a brilliant move, because there were going to be separate investigations initially, and the idea that the Republicans presented to make a joint investigation was a tactic on behalf of them to make sure that the investigation did not have the power it would have. But now by the Democrats making the statement and pulling out, it isolates the Republicans even more, because Republicans are starting to turn on themselves. It's a beautiful thing, people. It really is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it is lovely.
I mean, I don't want to experience too deep a liberal schadenfreude here. And, you know, certainly we can't celebrate too much, because then we'll just look like bullies. But this is the best thing that ever happened to this
administration. Well, what's wrong with looking like bullies? The Republicans have no problem with being, not just looking like, with being bullies.
You're absolutely right. Screw them. And I say that there's no reason not to rejoice in the failure of the Republicans at this point in time.
Well, this is a gross failure. And you're going to hear a lot over the next few weeks about how it's not really a gross failure. Remember that Michael Chertoff and Condoleezza Rice and Dick Cheney, all these people have been briefed by none other than Karl Rove. There's a script involved here. This is not just people, you know, randomly deciding to visit the South. Believe me.
And
Cheney has no interest in the South.
I think this is also something that backfired. I think that Karl Rove actually caused a hurricane to cover up for what the investigation into him, that he got hold of one of those old Reichian Orgone weather changer cloud blaster machines and was on top of the Capitol actually changing the weather, and then it all backfired in his face. But, of course, he's not going to take the hit because he's running everything. Maybe this is a conspiracy theory, but I think it's true. I saw it on the web.
Well, hey, you know what? You may not be that far from wrong. You know, what you have here is everyone trying to blame everyone else. And the Republicans in particular are trying to offload blame not just from Bush, but from the entire inner circle and, most importantly, from Michael Chertoff. Because they don't want to have to blow him out. I don't really think they care one way or the other about Michael Brown. He may be gone by next week. I wouldn't be buying a condo in Washington if I were him. But Chertoff, on the other hand,
maybe New Orleans.
New Orleans, yeah, but he could find something down there. But the bottom line is that these folks are now in full cover your behind mode. And there is no cover. There really is not a cover. This is the worst. Well, never mind. I'll get into that.
Yeah, there's a whole publicity tour down there. They sent Cheney down to oversee some construction project by Halliburton.
Yeah.
And also, I think he's just going to go walk around to people in the water and say, you're a bad, poor person. This is your fault.
Well, you know what? Some people down there apparently had something nice to say to him, which we'll get into a little later.
That was amazing. You know why? Because they came, and if you haven't heard it, look forward to it because it's coming up. But you know, one thing that was amazing about that is they classify the guy as a protester. And two things that mean, it sounded like it was just some guy walking by.
Yeah, it looked like he was on his way home from work or
something. Walking by, and he was polite in the sense that he said, Mr. Cheney.
Mr. Cheney, yeah.
But we'll get into that in just a second. We'll get into Bush's poll numbers, which it would surprise you to know who the country would rather have as president right now, because I don't think you could ever guess. It's 15 past the hour. We're live at the new school down here on Wall Street and 6th Avenue in New York. In New York City, it's 15. Diary State, 15 past the hour. It's Morning Tradition, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Is it possible for you to shut the f*** up for 10 seconds?
Morning Tradition on Air America Radio.
Hey, what's
going on? Good morning. It's Mark Maron here and Mark Riley.
Hey.
19 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Tradition. We're broadcasting live from the new school's famous Fishman Auditorium. We're down here on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. Come on down. In a little while, we're going to have former Senator Bob Kerrey, Stephen Colbert from the Daily Show is going to be here. Sarah Jones is going to be here. She was doing some big show last night with Barry Crimmins and Kurt Vonnegut. Going to have to talk to her about that.
Yeah.
Barry Crimmins and Kurt Vonnegut. There's
what a pair.
There's an upbeat show. Anyways, I'm full of the beans this morning there, Riley, apparently.
Yeah.
We got the mud truck outside, if that will inspire anybody. I'm already jacked up to the gills. Every time these guys show up, I just start to freak out about now. Actually, in about another 10 or 15 minutes. Let's get into these polls, or do you want to do Cheney first? Let's do Cheney first.
Let's do Cheney first. So he's more fun.
Dick Cheney's on TV yesterday. This was one of those beautiful moments that just slipped through the cracks. You got a dog of the week ready, right, for a few minutes later?
Yeah, I do.
All right, good.
I just want you to know.
No, that's all right. We wouldn't tip the dog of the week. But Dick Cheney just standing on the street talking to reporters, and out of nowhere, we hear this. Chris?
You've got, as I was talking to the mayor, in those areas, one of the things you've got,
Mr. Cheney.
You've got to figure out what to do with all of the debris.
Are you getting a lot of that, Mr. Vice President?
And it's the first time I've heard it. A friend of John, never mind.
Now, what the hell was that joke he was trying to make? Was he actually going back to is it a John Kerry joke?
Is it a John Kerry joke? Is it a Pat Leahy joke? Because although he said he never heard it before, he certainly has uttered it.
I just love that the guy treated the Vice President with the respect in the middle of that. You know, it's just like, bleep you, Mr. Cheney. Mr. Cheney.
Well,
that makes it a little better.
But you know
it?
What was really interesting? I think Cheney was prepared to just keep going like nothing happened until the reporter asked him something about it.
You know? That's true.
He was just going. Well, wait a minute. Do you get this all the time? It was like he was not really prepared to stop this at all. And I think it was just some guy on his way home from work. He probably half lost his house. He doesn't know where his family is. And here comes the schmuck from Wyoming down here acting like he cares.
Yeah, that's exactly what he thought. There's that guy from Wyoming.
Yeah. Our moron vice president. I mean, that's where he was during all of this, by the way.
It did seem like that, though. It did seem like there was nobody around. It just seemed like, you know, he was just standing on the sidewalk and somebody was just passing by and like, oh, there's that guy that ruined the country.
Yeah.
Hey, go screw yourself, dude. But it was interesting, though. You're right that the reporter did throw to him. I hate when they do this improvisational comedic theater and allow those guys to make jokes, because there was a moment there where I thought that Cheney looked fragile and unable to deal with it. It was a brief second, but it was a very joyful second for me. I like the fact that he's starting to look old and broken. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, I don't think it's too great to talk about the amount of schadenfreude I'm experiencing and just how tremendous it is to see Dick Cheney get fragile and know that his heart could go out at any second. I don't like experiencing joy because as a progressive somewhat, I should feel somewhat empathetic to even the most evil people in the world.
I mean,
people are people, but I want to see him die. And I'd like to see him.
That's like feeling empathy for Paul Pot, for God's
sake.
Yeah,
well, you know, sympathy for the devil, my friend. You know, you never know what price you're going to pay in the long run.
Oh, but I know the price I'm going to pay. Look, I got my trip on the All-Star train to hell booked already.
I'll meet you there. But I would like to see him die on television. Anyways, as I said, but in a good way. You know, I would say, if he just dropped that on TV, I'd be like, oh, dude, that's... But at least I'll have the moments where I'll feel a bit of pain, but they'll go away quickly. Let's move into these polls because these are very exciting. These are tremendous. Bush's poll numbers. We're going to do the iNews after this. Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be funny because the machine is here. Y'all see the machine, right? The iNews machine. You see it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You all see it.
We're going to play along. Yes, Mark.
Yeah.
Yes, we're in radio land. All right, let's get into these poll numbers, Riley, because Bush is going down the tank bad.
Well, when it comes to Katrina, it's really ugly. Only 36% of those surveyed, and this is a Zogby poll, say that he's done a decent job with Hurricane Katrina. 36% positive, 60% negative. Overall, his approval rating is at an all-time low, 41%. And guess who Americans who were surveyed would vote for before they voted for Bush again?
Hold that thought, Riley, because I think it's important just to read these other numbers because they're all really stinky
and bad.
On taxes, 59% negative. How great is that? Look at this. War in Iraq, 59% negative. Beautiful. Foreign policy, 59% negative. Jobs in the economy, 61% negative. America is finally waking up, folks. It's unbelievable. These polls are beautiful. This is good news. This guy's not even going to be able to get a free meal in a couple weeks.
Yeah, Social Security and health care, by the way, he's 67% negative.
Oh, my God. It just took this culmination of Republican policies and the beauty of Mother Nature, if there is a God. And, I certainly don't want to, that's not really the right way to look at it. In the face of this this horrendous disaster, I think that people, and because of some reporters in this country, have finally started doing their job again, which I think is a great testament to certainly, Tim Russert woke up and made some statements against administration.
Keith Olbermann has said some stuff.
Yeah, even Williams did a pretty good job from NBC.
Brian Williams.
Yeah, he did pretty good, too. And all of a sudden, they're like, they can't avoid it. It's a natural disaster. And through the window of this horrendous event, we are seeing the truth about this administration. I think it's great. So tell them now who Americans would rather see as president.
Jimmy Carter, ladies and gentlemen. Jimmy Carter. Now, see, I've been working with Mark Maron now for about 15 months, and I'm starting to think like him. The biggest negative rating that Bush gets is on gas prices, 73% negative. I'm trying to figure out what world the 7% who think he's doing an excellent job on gas prices, what world do they live in? Or do they all take the train? I don't understand.
They live in bushland. You know, I mean, this is the weird thing about polls, and this is something we're going to get into, because the polls, the CNN poll that the Republicans and the talking heads of the Republican pundits are citing, was a poll that was done in a lot different way than the Zoghbi poll. Zoghbi is a very respectable polling institute. They do it right. CNN took a poll with much fewer numbers, and it was sort of one of those push polling type of situations where they would call people and go, on a scale from good to really bad, how would you rate the president in this? And when somebody who might support the president are giving those options, and you know, that's when they have that weird little trigger where they're like, oh, you have to respect the president, and they'll say good as opposed to he sucks just because he's Bush, and it's not really a legitimate polling device, I think.
Well, this is the CNN USA Today Gallup poll. It was released on Tuesday. And they're saying 56% of the adults that they polled, and again, you're talking about 609 adults over the Labor Day weekend, which is not a great time to do polling under any circumstances, folks. Think about where you were on Labor Day and then ask yourself whether you would have answered any poll questions. But at any rate,
they got a lot of this. What? What are you kidding me?
Yeah.
No, I'm eating.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, they talk about whether or not they should rebuild and that sort of thing. But Bush's margins are still bad or terrible, 42%.
We're going to be back in a second with the dog of the week.
Yeah.
We got Bob Perry, Stephen Colbert coming up. We're going to talk a little bit more about these poll numbers. So stay here. It's Air America Radio's Morning Tradition, 27 past the hour.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Out of the rubbles of Trent Lott's house, his house, lost his entire house, there's going to be a fantastic house, and I'm looking forward to sitting on the porch.
George Bush doesn't care about black people.
So many of the people in the arena here, you know, were underprivileged anyway. This is working very roughly.
Oblivious, in denial, dangerous.
We all agree that in many areas, the initial relief response to Hurricane Katrina was unacceptable at the local, state, and federal levels.
Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. The FEMA director is working 24.
Government officials fail to do what they're supposed to be doing. That's criminal behavior.
I don't think anybody anticipated the breach of the levees.
For many of this country's citizens, the mantra has been, as we were taught in social studies, it should always be, whether or not I voted for this president, he is still my president. I suspect anybody who had to give him that benefit of the doubt stopped doing so last week. I suspect also a lot of his supporters looking ahead to 08 are wondering how they can distance themselves from the two words which will define his government, our government, New Orleans.
All right, here we go. 35 past the hour. We're broadcasting live from the New School's famous Tishman Auditorium. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Reilly.
Hey.
Sarah America Radio's Morning Sedition. We've got former Senator Bob Kerrey going to be joining us in a few minutes. Stephen Colbert from The Daily Show will be here. Sarah Jones is going to be here. We got the mud truck out front giving away coffee. It's beautiful. This coffee is amazing. Oh, my God. My head's going to blow off. That was a beautiful montage. Give it up for Dan Pashman for putting together. And Brendan. Brendan McDonald, Dan Pashman for putting together the big montage. Right now, you know, sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily we have the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and give it some headlines. Oh, excellent. Beautiful.
There you go.
Let me move a little bit here so I can hit the button on the machine. Here we go from BBC News. Cheney to visit disaster zone. Cheney to visit disaster zone. Translation, Halliburton advance man arrives. All right, let's do it one more time. Cheney to visit disaster zone. Oh, this will be funnier. Oh, look, there's like four of them just came out of the machine. Cheney investigates liberal hurricane conspiracy. How about Cheney to scare remaining residents out of New Orleans? Cheney and voodoo priests hold demonic conference. All right, from Reuters, Schwarzenegger to veto gay marriage bill. Schwarzenegger to veto gay marriage bill. Translation, Schwarzenegger turns back on old bodybuilding pals.
Whoa.
I love when liberals groan. From Chicago. From the Chicago Tribune, Monica Lewinsky accepted for grad school. How could this be bad? That was just not going to be anything but tremendous. Monica Lewinsky accepted for grad school. Headmaster greets headmaster. Okay, listen to that chorus. I'm like, no. Is it wrong that I'm laughing? You know what? You know what time it is right now. It's time for Mark Reilly's Dog of the Week.
I don't know how I'm going to follow the headmaster bit, but here goes.
Come on.
In a week with tragedy heaped on tragedy in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, there are more than a few candidates for this week's dog. Homeland Security Czar Michael Chertoff would certainly qualify, but he'd be competing with his own underling, FEMA boss Michael Brown. The president, vice president, and secretary of state could all qualify, supervising the most inept administration since Warren Harding in the early 1920s. However, we don't really expect much from these bumblers, do we? This week's dog is someone most of us thought was a relatively benign figure. Given who she married and who she spawned, we should have known better. Former First Lady Barbara Bush toured the Houston Astrodome on Labor Day. Tens of thousands of displaced evacuees from New Orleans moved the old crone to utter the following.
And so many of the people in the arenas here, you know, were underprivileged anyway. This is working very well for them.
Now, this was no off-the-record comment picked up on a live microphone. She said this on American Public Media's Marketplace program. So much for her little tour having anything to do with showing compassion for victims. But then it was never really about that, was it? It was part of a script, one written by Karl Rove in response to the fact that the president's bumbling incompetence was once again exposed to the world. In Barbara Bush's case, the fruit really hasn't fallen far from the tree. That's why she's our Morning Sedition Dog of the Week.
You know, I tried. I tried to convince Mark Reilly to make it the bitch of the week.
I wasn't going to do
but
that.
But you wouldn't do it. But I mean, it would have been right because she's
a female
dog. All right,
we could call her what? A chien? That's French, isn't it?
I would just call her a bitch. Because it's a dog of the week. It's a play.
I know.
What a heinous...
I forgot it's college kids.
I didn't realize that was done on Marketplace. The irony of the whole thing is just horrible that you have her. She's literally just short of saying, look, they'll eat right out of your hands.
Yeah. Marie Antoinette at her finest.
So sitting beside me is our own Lucy Kerrigan, who is the booker of this show. And if you go to the Huffington blog here, You can read a piece on the Huffington Post that Lucy read about a visit that she made to New Orleans just 6 weeks ago. And I got to be honest with you, Lucy, I didn't know what to expect. I read it, and it's just a little personal memoir of a trip you took, and I choked up a little bit because your observations and the way you captured it were very nice. So you want to tell us what moved you the most about New Orleans?
Well, I went to New Orleans about 6 weeks ago, and for a weekend of partying in the French Quarter, and of course, looking at what's happening now in New Orleans, it is completely different. You know, we're looking back, and it's completely different. And the thing that stood out for me, certainly last week when I was thinking about everything that was going on, was a taxi ride I took from the airport to the French Quarter, and the taxi driver, who was this old guy who was pretty deaf. He was African-American, and he had this sort of beat-up jalopy of a taxi, and he was very, very sweet, and I just was thinking about him.
Well, it was interesting that because, you know, I've been to New Orleans like once or twice, and the one time I went, you get into a cab, and these guys, they know exactly, you know, they know their city, and they know what you want to see. And I was given a tour of the city, but what struck me about your piece was that you went, there was just sort of these two New Orleans that you wanted to go to that restaurant that was the best restaurant in the world,
right,
some people say.
Right, right.
And you were able to sort of, you know, kind of capture in your piece that you wrote the sort of class difference and the curiosity of what happened to that cab driver, because there was a certain sureness that you had that the people that you saw at the restaurant that you were eating at certainly must have gotten out.
Right, right. There's a restaurant in New Orleans called Galatoire's, which is apparently phenomenal. I mean, it is a phenomenal place, actually, and I'd heard about it a lot, and there's this whole kind of very excitement to go there. It was the one thing that I knew we were going to do in New Orleans. We'd be meeting friends down there, and they wanted to take us to Galatoire's, and so I was talking to the taxi driver, and I was, you know, have you ever been there? And he was, well, no, I've never been to Galatoire's. And I was looking at him and thinking to myself, well, wow, you know, this is a New Orleans institution. And he's never been. I don't know what that means, but I feel like there's something there. And so we went to Galatoire's, and it was a wonderful place. It was a wonderful time. It was a real big party. And it was basically a sort of more affluent, mm-hmm. mainly white crowd. Mm-hmm. And... yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I don't know. I have no idea. But I imagine that most of the people who were there that night got out. And I couldn't really necessarily say the same for the taxi driver.
The one time I went to New Orleans, it was weird because you always want to go down. I was, I'd graduated college and I went down there. I was taking a train across country because, you know, I was rugged. And I wasn't riding the rails per se in a cargo car, but I did get drunk the entire way. And I got to New Orleans. And I told the cab driver to give me a tour of the city and then recommend a hotel. Not a good idea. I ended up at a hotel that would, you know, cost like a nickel, and I slept on the biggest bed I'd ever slept on in my life. I don't know if that's just specific to New Orleans or if it's a touching story, but it went nowhere. But it was the biggest bed I ever slept on in my life. But the interesting thing about New Orleans in that this administration constantly saying that they didn't see anything coming. They didn't know this was coming. Even if you visit New Orleans, you have those moments where you're like, hey, how come the boats are up there?
Yeah.
You know, and everybody knows that the water is up there, and that when they bury people, they bury them above ground.
So yeah.
It's just completely ludicrous that these people, that the administration, the people that were involved in the rescue effort, could choose to say that.
Well, they say that because they want to cover the fact that the money that they should have been spending to keep New Orleans secure and dry was instead funneled off in tax cuts to Bush's friends and to the war in Iraq. That's where the money went. It's as simple as that. And that's what he's trying to cover up. The fact that his friends got the dough and the poor people of New Orleans suffered as a direct result of that.
Well, look, you know, in just a couple minutes, we're going to have Johnny K Street's going to come out here, and we're also going to talk about what New York is doing to help New Orleans and what you can do if you live here in New York to help the people in New Orleans. We're broadcasting live from the New School's famous Tishman Auditorium. Come on down. We've got Stephen Colbert. We've got Bob Carey. Thank you, Lucy.
Thank you, Lucy,
for stopping by. We got the mud truck out front. It's 44 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Congressman Gerald Nadler from New York's 8th District, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
Oh,
Good morning. It's 49 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Edition program coming to you live from the New School Dishman Auditorium. We're down here on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue in New York City. We got Stephen Colbert from The Daily Show coming up. We got Senator Bob Kerrey coming up. Sarah Jones, the performance artist, is here. There's free coffee. That's why I'm talking like this. It's excellent. It's a mud truck coffee. Some guy just gave me these beautiful T-shirts. And I'll tell you where to get them in just a second. I just misplaced a card.
Uh-oh.
Oh, man.
You've done it this time.
Alternatees. That's it. Alternatees. They're really clever George Bush kind of funny shirts. Thank you for bringing them up. Alternatees.com. That's A-L-T-E-R-N-A-T-E-E-S. Yes? .com? Beautiful. All right.
Hey, Mark.
What's up, buddy?
I got somebody here who wants to speak to you. What's your name, sir?
Hi, Mark and Mark. This is Ted from Nebraska.
All right.
I think it's disgusting the way the liberals have to blame Bush for the hurricane.
Oh, no, it's happening. Oh, no, I hate when this... help me, Riley. Oh, my God. Oh, no, it's happening. My thoughts are starting to change. I'm becoming him. Oh, no.
Live from Radio Halliburton, it's Right and Early, the conservatives' way to wake up with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good morning, neocons. Hey, Mark the Shark is live here at the New School. I'm in the mood to tear up some liberals. Old school, get it? Old school, get it? Huh? Do you get it? Huh? Hey, step on up into the shark tank and ask Mark the Shark a question.
Yeah, Mark the Shark? In the wake of the terrible tragedy in the Gulf Coast, President Bush...
Blame game. You liberals are always dumping on Bush. What about the governor? What about the mayor? What about Hillary Clinton? What about Sean Penn? What about all those people sitting on their asses in the Superdome? What about you, huh? I'm blaming you. Blame game over. Score, Mark the Shark 100, liberals 0. Next...
Mark the Shark, do you think the fact that half of Louisiana's National Guard was in Iraq during the hurricane hurt the rescue effort?
Well, that's an interesting observation. And though America is the wealthiest nation on Earth, our resources are not unlimited, and our allocation of these resources often requires difficult and even painful decisions. Let me break your question down into 3 points. USA! 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 Having the guard in Iraq didn't hurt. It helped, you idiot. Answer me this. How many terrorist attacks hit New Orleans in the past week? Huh? Huh? That's right, genius. 0. Why? Because we took the fight to them. And next time we should take the fight to the hurricanes, too. Come here, Katrina. Come here, sweetie. Suck on that, windbag. Consider yourself a tropical depression. Next.
Market Shark, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Hey, idiot, you're here.
What's with these hurricane people getting $2,000 apiece, man?
That's right. It's called the welfare state, patriot, and it blows. Barbara Bush was right. These people won the lottery.
Oh, boo-hoo. The hurricane got my sidewalk, got a little damp, so now Uncle Sam owes me $2,000 so I can buy pot and late-term abortions.
Hey, scam artist, you expect the American taxpayers to pimp your wheelchair, granny? Well, you can kiss my Astrodome.
Next. Yes. I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
That's right. Stick around, neocons. We'll be back with Toby Keith.
Don't touch that dial, Patriot. We'll be back with Right and Early.
Oh, man.
You okay, Mary?
I don't know. This coffee, did I black out?
I don't know, man.
I hate when that happens. Like, it seems every time we do this live, I black out or I don't even drink anymore. But everything was cool.
There
was
you don't use any steroids or anything.
yeah. Like, if I'm using them, they ain't working, bro. let's talk about what the state of New York is doing for the victims of Katrina. The state has donated $2.5 million to the Red Cross. The state is preparing to send 1,000 Army National Guard troops to the Gulf Coast in the next 10 days. These are troops specializing in policing, civil engineering, logistical support. The fire department is providing about 300 people in New Orleans. The state is looking for transitional housing for up to 6 months and temporary housing for up to 18 months.
New York originally offered shelter space, but, I mean, you know, in all honesty, the homeless are frightened to go into the shelters here.
Yeah.
So that this has been shifted. Earlier this week, New York officials told FEMA the state could take at least 5,000 displaced Americans, and Bloomberg, Mayor Bloomberg here in New York said the city itself can take 1,000.
Yeah, and Secretary of State Randy Daniels is actually heading up the New York State relief effort, and there's a hotline, 1-888-7-NYS-AID, which is in normal language, 697-243. Wait a minute. I'm missing a number here.
You're out on the ice, Riley. Don't suck me into it.
Thank you very much. Anyway, it's 1-888-7-NYS-AID.
We've been getting into a lot of math trouble, buddy.
I know, man. I'm a little slow. What can I tell you? I flunked it. Maybe I need to take a course here at the New School.
You know, I did take a course here at the New School once. I'll tell you about that. Yeah, that was back in the big idea pot smoking days. You know, when you're just watching your life just waste away and bubble out of a bong, and then you have that one morning where you're like, I'm going to go back to college.
And change the world.
Yeah, that lasted a few weeks. But it was a profound few weeks.
I understand.
I took a philosophy class. We don't have to get into it right now.
I used to go to Riverside Park and solve all the problems of the world.
Yeah, how'd that go? I can tell you did a great job.
I'm here, right?
Hey, you know what? It's all your fault, this hurricane thing.
Oh, no. You can't put that on me, pal.
All right. Look, I just want to say something. You know, they made somehow or another Hunter S. Thompson's suicide note was released yesterday. He did leave one. And I got to be honest with you. As a longtime fan, a deep fan of Hunter S. Thompson's, I love the suicide note. Is it wrong to love a guy's suicide note? The way it was set up in the paper, I thought was tremendous. I'll read it to you. It's a little depressing, but I believe that the punchline is good. Hunter S. Thompson's suicide note, quote, "No more games, no more bombs, no more walking, no more fun, no more swimming, 67. That is 17 years past 50. 17 more than I needed or wanted. Boring. I am always bitchy. No fun for anybody. 67. You are getting greedy. Act your age. Relax. This wound hurts." End quote. And the title of the name was, the title of the note was, "Football season is over." Ah, very touching and sad, but pertinent, I think, to Hunter's style. I don't have any, anger. I have sadness, but, you know, if this is the way he wanted to go, that's the way he wanted to go. But I just love the fact that football season was over. What's that? Okay. You know, you're the guy that always says things sort of out of context and interesting that have to do with Bush. And I'm glad you're here. But I'm sure that's exactly what Hunter would have wanted is for George Bush to have his suicide note.
You know, it's ironic.
It's interesting because, you know, he picked his moment. Because usually you'll get like, "Bush sucks" at some point from this guy who always comes, and I'm glad to see you. But that one was this poorly timed. We're going to be back. We've got Johnny K Street coming up. We've got Bob Carey, Stephen Colbert. We've got more of Mark Riley and myself.
Where?
It's 15 past the hour. We're broadcasting live from the New School here on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. Come on down. We got free coffee.
Edition on Air America Radio.
It's 6 past the hour. Good morning, geniuses. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey!
You're listening to Morning Citizen on Air America Radio. We're broadcasting live from the New School in the famous Tishman Auditorium here on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. Come on down. We got Senator Bob Carey coming up. Stephen Colbert from The Daily Show. Sarah Jones, the performance artist, is going to be here. Free coffee. Mark Riley sitting right there. It's amazing. Lynn from Queens brought us some vegetables, Mark. We got cucumbers, tomatoes.
Oh, wow.
Fresh catnip. I'm going to go get my cat stoned later.
Oh, yeah.
Terry, this cat flew all the way from Madison, Wisconsin, my friend.
Yeah.
Just to see the show. Just to see the show. It wasn't like, you know, I was in town, I was going to stop by. He came here just to see the show. Thank you so much. I hope you get a job soon. I'm kidding, man. We're cool, right? I insult the guy that flew from Wisconsin. You know, all of a sudden, fan turns into stalker, turns into assassin. Mark Maron found dead. All right, here we go. That was a pretty grisly little scenario I put out there. There are lots of big stories in the news this week.
Yeah? So it's time to get some bets down with our Inside the Beltway odds maker, Johnny K Street. Johnny, where are you, buddy?
Yeah!
Hey, buddy. What's going on? Where's the action?
Beautiful people.
Yeah, where's the action, man? What do you got?
The action follows me, baby! Oh, man, it's nice to be here at the new school, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Professor Johnny K's got a little advice for you. Don't get behind in your VIG, okay?
All right. So what do you think
in
of
your
me?
VIG.
I got it.
Is this on?
So how do you like
don't
this?
Get me started.
So how do you like the new school there, Johnny?
Well, you know, they didn't have new schools when I was a kid. Just old schools, old books, old nuns. Nuns.
So, Johnny, you went to Catholic school?
Yeah, I went to Our Lady of the Bleeding Head Wound in Brooklyn. Good times. You know, things were different back then. Kids didn't bring guns to school. They didn't have metal detectors. You know, they'd bring a chain, brass knuckles, a switchblade. That was a kinder, gentler time in America, let me tell you.
So were you a juvenile delinquent when you were a kid there, Johnny?
Not really.
Uh-huh.
Believe it or not, I was a shy kid. I was introverted. My mother used to drive me to the gang fights. I brought an electric knife once. I didn't know what the hell I was doing.
So Johnny, let's get down to business. I want to make some money, killer. What kind of action are we looking at?
Let's get down to business. All I got Michael Brown action, baby. Michael Brown, the head of FEMA. What a freaking moron this guy is. Come on, let's be honest. I haven't seen someone screw something up like that since Copeland made Godfather 3. You know what I'm saying? When I saw Michael Brown on CNN, he looked more confused than Courtney Love in court. Yeah, the head of the International Arabian Horse Association, head of FEMA. You know, if I had taken that long shot, I'd be homeless right now.
So you think he's going to keep his job there, John?
I wish they'd make him the head of the FBI, to tell you the truth. Is there a delay when you do a live show? Oh, brother. Word on the street is this guy's an imbecile, but 1,001, Bush will never fire him. Never.
I'm down for a C-note on that.
Yeah, Johnny, put me down for 5 large.
Beautiful.
What else are we looking at there, Johnny?
All right, the estate tax, baby.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Rob from the poor to give to the rich. That's the Bush administration for you right there. They're stepping off from the estate tax a little bit right now, but after the Katrina thing dies down, they're going to push that right through. Don't worry about it. Going to screw the poor every chance they get.
So what is that? What are the odds on that?
The odds on that are about 500 to 1. So
right,
get your money down.
I'll take that for a yard there, Johnny.
That's a good bet.
Yo, put me down for a grand, Johnny.
Beautiful. All right. 100 to 1.
Yeah, what do you got? What do you
think
about
this? This guy's just getting the first joke in the aisle right there. Obviously, he doesn't go to the new school, if you know what I mean.
What do you think about the Bush administration already starting to shift blame to New Orleans Democratic mayor and Democratic governor?
Hey, by the time they're done, they'll be blaming gay people, Hollywood, and Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
So how much? What are the odds on that? About 100 to 1?
It's about 100 to 1.
All right, I'll take that for 1,000, buddy.
I'm down for a grand on that. Johnny, you got a sure thing this week?
There's only one sure thing this week. We all know what it is. If those were white people in New Orleans, Bush would have been flying them out on Air Force One himself, all right? Am I making this up? All right, here's my recovery plan. Shirt off and Brown open their homes to the hurricane victims. How about that?
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, that'll happen the day after Bush does a week at the Apollo and the Bush twins enlist. You know what I'm saying? Do your homework. I got to get the court.
All right. Good to see you, Johnny.
All right, Johnny.
Johnny K Street with the odds there. I think we got Pendejo in the wings. The revolutionary is going to come share the struggle. The ongoing chore of the revolution is he's going to be here in just a few minutes. Let's do these poll numbers again just to make people happy as they drive to work. By the way, we are broadcasting live from the new school. It's at 12th Street, just a little east of it's east of 6th Avenue. Yeah,
east of 6th Avenue.
And we'd like you to come down. It's filling up here. We got a nice crowd. Got a lot of regulars, some new people. We got free coffee from the mud truck. But let's get into these poll numbers again because, again, I think they're beautiful. And I want to discuss something. We talked about something earlier. The overall rating of Bush. I just want to go down the list. When it comes to taxes, 59% negative. This is a Zogby poll, newest Zogby poll. When it comes to the war in Iraq, 59% negative. Foreign policy, 59% negative. Jobs in the economy, 61% negative. Hurricane Katrina, obviously, 60% negative. Should be a little higher. I think that's going to go up as time goes on.
Yeah.
The environment, 60% negative. Education, 59% negative. Social Security and Medicare, 67% negative. Gas prices, 73% negative. The guy's going down the tubes, and it's beautiful.
Well, yeah, he is. Under any other circumstances, his position would be untenable. Remember, for all this bungling, very few people, other than us, man, talk about impeaching this guy. Remember that they went after Bill Clinton over sex. And here's a guy who has bungled a war, who has bungled an economy, and now has bungled a natural disaster. And no one talks about getting rid of him. Nobody. Why not?
And the interesting thing about this poll is that all the previous presidents that we've known like Clinton, Bush, Reagan, even Jimmy Carter, the Americans would prefer Carter much more than the president we have now.
Yeah.
But the odd thing to me is, and also a very telling thing, is that he would still beat Kerry.
Yeah, by one point.
By one point, which is interesting because it tells me that, you know, especially at the time we're at now, where America is looking for leadership, certainly revolving around the reaction to the disaster, is that Democrats really need to step up and provide, you know, a plan for leadership and take, you know, and take control of the situation. Like you said, they were doing that where they pulled out of this the joint cabinet's investigation.
Yeah, that's because they knew going in that it was fixed. They
right.
are not the majority in the House or in the Senate. So they knew that this joint investigation, which was essentially done by Frist and Denny Hastert.
As damage control, though. Let's be honest. I mean, it wasn't going to be a joint investigation. They said it was going to be to sort of to water it down and make it long and not necessarily effective. So I think it's a tremendous move on behalf of the Democrats to pull out of it.
It was a brilliant move. And remember, anybody in this room could formulate the conclusion of this committee right here, right now. Okay? It was a terrible disaster, but it was nobody's fault. That's what they're going to say. That is what the Republicans, that is the whole reason. They say it was, we don't want all of these different disaster people having to testify before two committees. That's nonsense. The reason why they did this was to try and control the damage that's being done to their president, control the damage that's being done to their interests next year when there are elections coming up, and to control the damage done. They jumped all over Hillary Clinton, saying that she was, because she's running for president, she's been critical.
I'll tell you, right now that we have that the polls are so negative and that people are finally starting to wake up in this country, we might move away from this weird 50-50 divided country thing that, maybe the Democrats can really step up. And we're going to talk to former Senator Bob Kerry right here, who was part of the 9/11 Commission hearing.
Yes, he was.
That some of them were held right here in this room to maybe tell us how this is going to unfold and how these hearings are going to unfold and what the odds are and what's going to happen. But coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to have Pendejo, the revolutionary.
Yeah.
We are broadcasting live from the new school in the Tishman Auditorium. We're on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. Come on down. We got Mud Truck Coffee. We got Stephen Colbert. We got Bob Kerry. We got Sarah Jones coming up at 15 past the hour. Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Now, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
Good morning. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition, broadcasting live from the Tishman Auditorium here at the New School. We're on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. Come on down. We got free coffee. We got it all. We got Bob Kerry coming up. We got Sarah Jones coming up. Stephen Colbert from The Daily Show is going to stop by. It'll be nice to see him. We got the mud truck out front. But right now, I think it's very important that we say hello to Pendejo, the revolutionary, is here. And he seems a little agitated. What's going on, Brendan? He just showed up. He just wandered in. I'm sorry, man. So what's going on? What's the matter?
Mark, I need your help.
What can I do within reason?
My sister is here with me today.
Oh, great! I didn't know you had a sister. And
no time for that, Mark. She's in the bathroom, but she's coming.
I still don't know what you need from me, man.
Well, if you give me a second to speak. I'm sorry, Mark. It's just that I've told her things about the revolution. Things like...
Like
how it's,
actually going somewhere?
See, Mark. But there's more. I've told her that you are my...
Oh, my God. You're what?
My lieutenant. And I told her that we do things together, revolutionary things. It adds a bit of cachet. She's very impressed. That's never happened before. Please, just for a couple of minutes, play along. And everyone, please just pretend I'm an accomplished revolutionary. Comprende?
Oh, man. Jeez, this is gonna...
Oh, there she is!
All right.
The revolution! Right, Mark?
Yes, that's right, Colonel Pendejo.
Yes, excellent day for the revolution, Lieutenant Mark.
Uh-huh.
Oh, Lily, over here, Lily. I was just talking to my underling.
Lieutenant.
Yes, my lieutenant, Mark, here, yeah. Who is a friend of mine here.
Yeah.
We go way back. I was just having a laugh with him about the time we were creating a sudden and momentous change in the status quo, resulting in the overthrow of the government and its replacement type thingy. That time in Cleveland. Remember, Mark, Cleveland?
Oh, yeah. We certainly yes. showed them in Cleveland together, him and I, we in the revolution. So Lily, you're Pendejo's sister, huh?
He calls you Pendejo? Is that Spanish for, like, idiot?
I've reclaimed the word, and now I am empowered by it. Long story. Anyway, Mark, do you remember that one time in the revolution, which is ongoing and very successful, when we infiltrated a G7 cocktail party in ball gowns and high white powdered wigs?
Yes, I did that with you. Of course, I remember, and I frequently wear women's clothes in support of the revolution, of which you are my leader.
Yes,
my leader.
He's a master of disguise, Lily. Why, dozens of times Mark has dressed up like a lady in finery, haven't you, Mark?
I said yes. Okay, I said.
Oh, I see what's going on here. This is like the time in college when you were like an actual dungeon master and you wore that black cowl for like 6 months and carried that stupid jeweled stick.
Scepter, Lily. Scepter. And no, it's not like that at all. Ask the people here. Mi hermanos y hermanas. Am I not a real revolutionary? Say it with me, the revolution!
Okay, thank you for playing with my brother, Mark. You seem like a nice man. I gotta go. Goodbye, Pendejo. Good Lord.
Yes, goodbye, Lily. I'll just be here doing revolutionary thingamabobs. Goodbye, I guess you've decided not to lend me that $60. Okay. Goodbye. Ooh, that went very well, Mark.
Yeah, if well is understood to mean as bad as it could have gone, I think you're right. Yeah, it went very well. So why don't you just move along there, Pendejo. That was very
Viva good. La Revolution!
Yay. Did you just give me one of those little pats on the butt, huh? Yeah.
Yeah, he patted the inside of my thigh.
He did?
Yeah.
I'm not uncomfortable with it, but I was never a football player. I never had that weird, hey, there you go, buddy. So when he does this sort of out of context, it's like, wait, what the, you know?
You win some, you lose some.
No, it's great. Can I quickly tell my story about the new school before we bring Bob Carroll?
I
took a class here. I decided that it was time to turn my life around. And you know that moment you have where you're like 35 and you think that just because you didn't understand something in college, that even though you haven't done any research into that thing since then, you just think because you're older, you will have miraculously learned how to understand it? Well, I took a philosophy class, and what I used to do, if I can be honest with you, this is back in the old days, I used to get high at my house over on 3rd Avenue, and I'd come to philosophy class, and I was really expecting something, engaging. We were going to discuss life. And what happened was it was sort of the equations and logic, and there was some mathematics to philosophy, and I was getting sort of bored and annoyed with the teacher. And he asked me, because he knew I was a smartass, he said, why are you taking my class? And I said, because I want to learn about philosophy. He goes, well, what do you do? And I say, I'm a comedian. And he's like, is this funny to you? And I'm like, no, but, I'm learning things. My head seems to be pretty filled up when I leave, which, in retrospect, very stoned thing to say. I said, my head seems to be pretty filled up when I leave. And the guy looks at me. This was the genius moment. He goes, well, you can fill your head two ways. Either you can add new things to it, or you can heat up what's already in there so it expands. And, like, literally, I was like, what? What? You know, and I, that was the last day I went to class. I had learned enough. That guy was a genius. Hated me.
Either
hated
that
me.
Or he had the same stuff you were on.
No. He was a very straight dude. You know, he was teaching Popper, which I don't even know apparently was a philosopher.
Poppers?
Yeah, no, not Riley. I'm trying to pull back from the
we're
trenches.
We're in the village. Man.
Yeah, we got Bob Carey. Come on, we got to get back into the respectable mode.
Yes.
Out of the drug land. But no, it wasn't that kind of Poppers.
Okay.
And those were the old days. We have in the wings here, Senator Bob Carey is going to be with us in just a few minutes. We've got...
Yeah, you better applaud if you want to pass any classes around here.
We've got Stephen Colbert coming down from The Daily Show. Sarah Jones is going to be here. We've still got the mud truck out front. We're on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. So why don't you come down, get some free coffee. Email us at sedition@airamericaradio.com. You can podcast us. A million things you can do. But stay here with us. It's 27 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Disagreement. I'd like to have a chance to address
well,
it.
No. Actually, there's going to be, we have many points of disagreement that we'll have a chance to do in closed session. You can't. Please don't filibuster me. Not fair. You said the president was tired of swatting flies. Can you tell me one example where the president swatted a fly when it came to Al Qaeda prior to 9/11?
I think what the president was speaking to was
what fly had he swatted?
Well, the disruptions abroad was what he was really focusing on. CIA would go after Abu Zubaydah, go after this guy, and
Dr. Rice, we didn't. We only swatted a fly once on the 20th of August, 1998. We didn't swat any flies afterwards. How the hell could he be tired?
Omaha, you've been weighing heavy on my mind.
The hour. We're broadcasting live from the New School's Tisch Auditorium. That was a montage of our next guest, who is a former governor and two-term Democratic senator from Nebraska, as well as a former member of the 9/11 Commission. He is currently the president of the New School, which makes him our host today. Good morning, Bob Carey. Thank you for coming. Thank you for having us. It's a pleasure to be here. Nice to see you. So, you know, here we are. Yeah, go ahead.
Drug Enforcement Agency just joined us in the back. Did they?
After that last story, you think the drug... That's that Marin kid he just talked about, smoking reefer. Yeah.
Uh-oh.
So this is a... You had some of the 9/11 Commission hearings, you know, right here in this room. You're intimately aware of the government's failures during the period of 9/11. Now, how about the government's poor response to this hurricane situation? I mean, we talked to Larry Johnson the other day, and how safe is the country? He doesn't seem to think it's very safe.
No, I think with all evidence in after the hurricane, we failed the first big test after 9/11, and failed it miserably.
So now you can applaud that if you want. And obviously they bungled this entire recovery and they bungled the entire reaction. And do you think some heads should roll? Are you gonna you're a very outspoken person.
Well, I mean, I certainly think the president needs to take responsibility for it.
Yes. How is that ever going to happen?
Well, you know, I mean, the whole 9/11 story, especially on the day of 9/11, every impartial observer that came and looked at the details said that the government wasn't communicating with each other. Well, here you got a situation where on the Friday after the Sunday hurricane, the dikes broke on Monday. And the president goes on Good Morning America and said nobody knew these things were going to break. That isn't true.
Right.
So either he knew it wasn't true and lied on Good Morning America, or he didn't know something that the president of the United States should have known on Friday afterwards. Then on Sunday, the guy who's in charge of Homeland Security, Chertoff, goes on Russert and says, after the Republicans are out saying, you know, the critics are playing the blame game, they're out there blaming governors and mayors for not doing it. And he said, look, this isn't a federal responsibility. It's state and local. Mr. Chertoff, under federal law, the United States Army Corps of Engineers owns the Missouri and Mississippi River. These are federal dikes. These are federal projects. And not only that, but the governor of Mississippi was hampered in her ability to respond as a consequence of the federal government intervening and taking Louisiana National Guardsmen and sending them to Afghanistan and Iraq. So all of a sudden, anybody who criticizes the president for failing to respond is playing the blame game while they're out blaming the mayor and the governor for not getting the job done. They failed to forecast what might happen. There were average citizens in Louisiana who were saying, this is a city that's underground, 20% underwater, 20% of the oil that comes to this country comes through Louisiana. I presume that even while you're on vacation, that Bush and Cheney should have known that. And they didn't respond. They did not protect that oil supply. They didn't protect the city of New Orleans. They didn't take, I would say, just sort of standard operating procedure precautions to evacuate the city. And the only people that got out were the people who had cars and had enough money to be able to get out. So they revealed real weaknesses in our own social policy. So, I mean, it's not the blame game to say, Mr. President, you're President of the United States. You're in charge of the Army Corps of Engineers. You were given all the authority that you needed to protect the people of Louisiana, of Mississippi, and Alabama, and you didn't. It's the same.
That's right. Our guest is Bob Kerry, Senator Bob Kerry.
Senator, you obviously spent quality time inside the Beltway, and we heard yesterday that the Democrats have pulled out of this joint House-Senate investigation of what happened in connection with Katrina. Do you think that was a good move? If you were still in the Senate, would you have thought that it was a good idea? They're not going to sit on those committees.
They didn't pull out. They weren't invited to participate. How can you pull out of something that you weren't invited to participate in? The Republicans decided to put this thing together. They didn't even invite the Democrats in to define the rules of the committee. They didn't pull out. The Republicans have the power to control the House and the Senate, and they create this committee. Look, you've got a Republican House, a Republican Senate with subpoena powers to request witnesses and documents and so forth, and they haven't used those subpoena powers in 5 years. The only power that the 9/11 Commission had was its willingness, and thank God we had Tom Kaine and other Republicans, Slade Gordon, who were willing to vote in the affirmative to use that subpoena power. It was the only way we got documents, limited though it was, and access to individuals. The only way we got it done was threatening to subpoena. So, I mean, did anybody think that a Republican Congress that hasn't used its subpoena powers to request individuals to testify or documents is going to use it in this case? They're with Mark, blowing weed before he comes down to a new school class. I mean, it isn't going to happen.
Uh-oh.
Just to defend myself, that was the old Mark. That was the younger Mark.
Senator, what do you think of Colin Powell, our former Secretary of State? Apparently, in an interview with Barbara Walters, said that his presentation to the UN in 2003 during the run-up to the war in Iraq is now painful to him and a stain.
He's a great man. He's honest. It must be painful, and it must feel like to him a stain. And good for him. I mean, I like him a lot. I think he's a terrific leader, and he must feel terrible about it. He goes to the United Nations and holds his stuff up and. We spent $500 million after we would get there looking for weapons of mass destruction. You had 2.5 million tons of conventional weapons. I mean, Jesus. You may not be for gun control in the United States, but we needed it in Iraq, and they didn't use it. So he must feel awful. And he's a good enough human being that he talks about it.
So let's talk a little bit about the 9/11 Commission and shift the focus a little bit. What are some of the successes of that, and what are the weaknesses that remain after all is said and done here now?
Well, I mean, the successes are, I would say, primarily that 5 Republicans and 5 Democrats agreed on a number of things that were relatively controversial. They were critical of Democratic presidents and critical of a Republican president. I mean, Chapter 8 had it all. Chapter 8 said, in spite of repeated warnings, this is the language of the 9/11 report, signed by 5 Republicans and 5 Democrats in a run-up to a presidential election, in spite of repeated warnings by the Central Intelligence Agency, the government of the United States of America did nothing. to warn the American people, to engage local law enforcement, to engage first responders, to do anything to track down individuals that they knew were a part of al-Qaeda's armed forces that were intending to do damage inside the United States. The weaknesses were, right from the beginning, we had limited authority. We tried to extend an extension beyond the election that the White House would, and the Republicans would not go along with any extension. We had limited resources and limited time. So time ran out, basically. We arrived in July of 04, and it was all over. We had to wrap it up as quickly as possible. And every moment where some witness would refuse to either testify or would refuse to provide documents, we found ourselves in a position of having to measure whether or not issuing a subpoena was wise, because it would take months to oftentimes to litigate these requests for a subpoena in court, and by that time the 9/11 Commission would be out of business. So it was a very difficult balance that Tom Kaine and Lee Hamilton had to play, and I think they successfully balanced this thing all the way to the end, but the weakness really was born of the statute itself. It gave the Commission very limited authority to do its work.
How many of the recommendations have been enacted in terms of taking action on the recommendations?
Well, I mean, I think the intelligence restructuring was quite good. The problem is if you don't intend to manage it properly, it's not going to get done. And I just think, at some point, the question is the CEO doing his job? And I think there was a failure in the summer of 2001. Not just of structure, not just of lack of authority, not just these walls that everybody talking about. The president's in his Ronnie's Ranch, the 6th of August, 2001, and here's a briefing that says Bin Laden intends to attack the United States of America. And it says in the document, and we now know because Dr. Rice, God bless her, answered Richard Vandenesse's question and broke the code, otherwise the American people wouldn't have known what it said. It said that there are 70 active al-Qaeda cells inside the United States. The president said that gave him comfort. Get the hell out of here. What kind of comfort did that give you? And there was no effort. If you look at the failure of the Federal Aeronautics Administration during that period, you say, what were you guys doing?
And it's
there was all kinds of evidence to indicate that they should have done some very serious scenario analysis about the possibility of hijacking an airplane, and they didn't.
It's amazing.
There was no increased security. These guys could have carried AK-47s onto the planes on the morning of the 11th of September, given the level of security that was going on in the airport after Bin Laden had declared war on the United States and carried out a series of attacks against us dating back to 1991. We knew all of that.
Yeah.
We had all that information, and we failed to respond. So I don't care what the structure of the government is, and I don't care how level of appropriations. If you're just sitting there, staring at the sunset, while these threats are coming over the transom, you're not going to be able to get the job done. And look, that's why it's appalling to me. You're sitting there with a Category 5 hurricane heading to New Orleans. Now, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to say, that city's underwater. Will the dikes hold? Well, I don't know what level of intelligence is involved in assessing this, but it wasn't a rocket science, that's for sure. But they didn't ask that question.
Unbelievable.
And in many ways, we got lucky because the storm turned east and didn't come hard into New Orleans as 24 hours earlier, it looked like it was going to. So no matter what the law is, if you're sitting at the top and you don't respond when you see something like that and mobilize people and just manage the darn thing, you're going to make mistakes.
Our guest is Senator Bob Kerrey. We're going to talk to him about his role as president here at the New School. We're going to see how many people know what actually gets taught here. It's going to be a little game with our audience. It's 46 past the hour. You come on down on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. We'll be back with more of Bob Kerrey in a second.
Morning Sedition.
Just to wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Past the hour. Good morning. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program.
Are you a member?
We're coming to you live from the New School Fishman Auditorium down here on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. Come on down. Our guest right here is president of the new school, former Democratic governor and two-term senator from Nebraska, Bob Carey, is with us.
Yeah.
And right here, right now, we're here at the new school, so we're going to play a little game. It's a school known for its wide variety of interesting classes, classes you definitely won't find anywhere else. But we want to know how well people here at the new school know their own course offerings. So we put together a list of fake new school classes with some real ones mixed in. Let's see if some people can pick out the real class from the list of each list of classes. Who's our first contestant here, Brendan?
We have Evan from the Bronx. He's studying media studies.
Okay, Evan, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Which of the following is a real new school class? We have biscuits, gravy, and bluegrass, the secrets of the Nepalese. We have hip-hop pedagogy. We have Bling, a Marxist perspective. Which one is the real class? Don't take too much time.
I'll go bluegrass.
Oh, man. No, it's not biscuits, gravy, and bluegrass.
Above, actually.
It's hip-hop pedagogy is the real class. Thanks for playing, though. Appreciate it. All right, here we go. Who's our next contestant? Yeah, what do you got?
This is Andrew from D.C. He's studying music here.
All right, Andrew, you ready?
I sure am.
Okay, here we go. Here are the three classes. Oh, man. Camel Toes and the High-Waisted Slacks of Denmark. The Fetish, the Transitional Object, and the Thing. And we have the Place, the Thing, and what's his name with the hat? Which one do you think it is?
I'm definitely going with the fetish one.
That's it. Good. Yeah, good deal. Andrew pulls it off. Do they win something?
Do they win something? Right.
Yeah, oh, they're all winners.
Okay, good.
They go to the new school. They're all winners anyway. All right, we have Elizabeth from Jersey City, and she's studying sociology.
All right, you ready, Elizabeth?
Yes.
Which of the following is a real new school class? Classic desserts of Imperial Vienna. vomiting outside of a club on Rivington Street, a field trip / workshop. Humiliation and Catharsis, the films of Rob Schneider. So what are you going to go with?
I'm going to go with the first one.
That's right, yeah. The classic desserts of Imperial Vienna.
All right, right now we got Georgia from Belgium.
Wow.
And she's a fine arts major.
All right, here we go. Pick the real class. The implant in 21st century, power tool or toy? Sushi workshop for kids. Tom Cruise is gay, a seminar for Midwestern moms. Which one do you think?
I believe number one is the most plausible.
Ooh, no. Sushi workshop for kids is the winning answer. But the implant in 21st century, power tool or toy.
All right, and we have Samantha from Chicago. She's studying fashion here.
Okay, here we go. Here are your three, Samantha. S'mores, an overview. The many redundant menu items of Mexico. The Portuguese culinary delights of Newark.
I go with C.
That's right. C is right. The Portuguese culinary delights of Newark.
There you go.
Good job. All right, now this last one's for Senator Kerry. You ready?
Yeah.
All right, here are the three. We have greeting card design and marketing. We have effective writing and stage direction for marionettes and hand puppets. And now we have a three-part survey course, which is why Paul McCartney has his eyes closed on the cover of Abbey Road.
I'll go with A.
Greeting card design and marketing is the right answer.
There you go.
Thank you. Thank you for playing. Excellent job, you guys. Now give them something. We can give them all something. So thank God you got that one right, right? So now what's going on here at the new school? What you've done a name change. Is that true?
Yeah, we have. I mean, one of the difficult things we've had here is that oftentimes the public doesn't understand that Parsons, Manus, and various other parts of the university are part of the whole. So mm-hmm. What we basically did was put the words new school in each one of those school names. So and the real challenge for us is to make certain that that the systems enable students to come in and take a wide variety of courses that are available at Parsons or Manus or Eugene Lang in the new school or elsewhere in the university. So we're very excited about the name change, but it's what we do to execute the strategy that really is important?
I'll tell you, it's a very eclectic student body. Certainly when I took a class here, you get a wide range of ages and people from all over the New York area. It's primarily, you don't have any housing, do you here?
Yes, we do.
Really?
Yeah, we sure do. We have
can
almost
I 2,000. Get a dorm room? Can I?
Not after what you said earlier. Get a dorm room.
You have how many
legal issues are involved?
We have about 2,000 residential units. Our the real change that's been going on at this university is that we're seeing an increasing number of what you consider to be traditional students, that is to say, coming straight out of high school, that are coming for on a full-time basis to Eugene Land College, to Parsons, to even the New School, where our four-credit degree programs are growing pretty rapidly. So that's the big change that's going on. And the hard thing is to make sure that somehow you maintain your connection to the traditions of the New School. So among the things we have to do is make certain not just that we have an eclectic group of students, but that we have an eclectic group of administrators as well who are thinking differently. Otherwise, we just become like everybody else.
Well, thanks a lot for being with us. This is Senator Bob Kerrey, president of the New School, former Democratic governor, two-term senator from Nebraska, member of the 9/11 Commission. I appreciate you coming down. We're broadcasting live from the New School's famous Tishman Auditorium. We're on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. Come down, have some free coffee. We'll be back with Lawton Smalls and Planet Bush. It's 57 past the hour.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour. Good morning. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio, broadcasting live from the New School's Tishman Auditorium. We're down on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. Come on down and get some free mud truck coffee. We got Stephen Colbert coming on in just a few minutes. How you doing over there, Riley?
I'm doing all right.
All right, man. So if you want more information on the mud truck, you can go to mudtruck.com. They've sponsored our events before. The mud truck coffee is like, it's like petroleum. It's like fuel, man.
It's better than steroids.
I'm remembering everything that ever happened in my life right now.
Really?
Because of this coffee. It's all coming back to me.
Uh-oh.
I hope that's not my life flashing before my eyes. I'm hoping it's just the coffee. We'll know in a second.
Damn.
No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm still here. Thank God.
There you go.
We got Stephen Colbert coming up momentarily. You know what I'd like to hear again, if we could, Kalo down there at the Morning Sedition Ground Mission Control? Could you play Cheney getting told off by that guy again?
You've got talking to the mayor in those areas. One of the things you
got
to
do, Mr. Cheney.
You got to figure out what to do with all of the debris.
Are you getting a lot of that, Mr. Vice President?
And it's the first time I've heard it. A friend of John, or of...
Oh, look at that. He couldn't even get his joke out. Beautiful.
Chuckle,
guy
chuckle.
Just walking by. Go get yourself, Mr. Cheney. I love that. Mr. Cheney. Oh. Can we hear it again, Chris, one more time, please?
You've got, as I was talking with the mayor, in those areas, one of the things you've
got...
You've got to figure out what to do with all of the debris.
Are you getting a lot of that, Mr. Vice President?
And it's the first time I've heard it. A friend of John, or of...
That was Vice President Cheney, if you don't know, on the street talking to a reporter, and someone just came by and did that. They called him a protester, but I think he was just a citizen.
He was a citizen. The amazing thing about this was this did not happen in New Orleans. It happened in Gulfport, Mississippi. I think he canceled the New Orleans stop after this happened.
Yeah, he canceled the Blame the Poor stop in New Orleans. Hey, folks, this is a good segue into this. Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So here now is Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Lawton. How you doing? Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Good morning, Mark. Anytime you're ready.
Yeah, I'm ready, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. God's got a squeegee.
He's mopping up Dixie.
Oh, man.
Mopping her right up.
All right, buddy. I want to ask you about something. I want to ask you about something that Kanye West said during the benefit concert about Bush's response to Hurricane Katrina. Quote, if I could, Kanye West said, Bush doesn't care about black people, end quote.
Well, Mark, that was a very hurtful thing that Kanye West said. Hurtful.
That's Kanye West. West.
That's what I said. Uh-huh. Conrad West. Yeah. You know, President George W. two terms mandate Bush is easily the most progressive president we've ever had when it comes to race. I got to tell you, I don't understand where Cornel West's anger is coming from. Hip-hop just seems angry to me. I don't know why Kurt would say that.
It's Kanye West. And, you don't know where the anger is coming from, Lawton.
No.
Don't you think it's at least suspicious that relief came so slowly for a city that is predominantly black and poor?
All right. I'm going to let your Secretary of State, Ms. Condoleezza Rice, respond to your race card, okay? Said Ms. Rice, quote, nobody, especially the president, would have left people unattended on the basis of race. Ace Trump's Joker, end of story.
No, you're done. Oh, yeah, Connie.
She has spoken.
She cares so much about black people that when Katrina hit, she was in New York buying expensive shoes and seeing the Monty Python musical Spam-A-Lot, my friend.
Okay, hang on a minute.
All right.
That was research. You see, Spam-A-Lot takes place in the Middle Ages and paints a very accurate portrait of people living in the mud, enduring plagues, all kinds of adverse situations. She was just doing her homework, Mark. Like President Bush always does.
Wow, yeah.
That was homework.
Yeah, yeah, he really did his homework on this one. Are you telling me that if the hurricane had hit some all-white suburb that he wouldn't have been on top of it immediately?
Of course he would have. But, Mark,
yeah,
you know why he waited to respond, don't you?
Oh, this is going to be good. Why?
Because he understands the black community.
He
would have gone in there and given them relief on day one. But that would have been so insulting. That would have been saying to the black community, you can't help yourselves. You're little babies. Okay, no, sir. He has too much respect for that. It's tough love, Mark. But it's love.
Oh, my God. You're really out there today, buddy. Where did he get that tough love idea from? His mother?
Probably.
Barbara Bush looked at all those poor people in the Astrodome and said this was working out well for some of them. What about that, my friend?
Well, I was taught never to disagree with my elders, especially if it's the sacred womb that issued forth President George W. two terms mandate Bush. A lot of anger today. But, hey, Mark, she's right. Those refugees are getting a pretty sweet deal down there. Shoot, I've never been to the Astrodome, okay? I'd love to see that. I hear it's great. And I sure as heck have never been there for free with three hots and a cot. It's a sweet deal. I hear Macy Gray was down there. You know, I don't know who that is, but it's probably good.
Oh, man.
I'd like to meet Macy Gray.
Oh, you're riding the line today, buddy. All right, so all those people are just having a party down there. Is that what you're saying?
Well,
the Astrodome, is that it? Well, and even you have to admit that there have been some serious, serious mistakes made this week, my friend.
Well, of course there's been some serious mistakes made, starting with that mayor of New Orleans, Ray Nagin.
Oh, come on.
He just kept running down President Bush week long, playing the blame game over and over again. You know, that man's a loose cannon.
Oh,
I have a video of Ray Nagin moving sandbags off the levee into the trunk of his car.
Stop.
I've got video, okay? Did you know he has a private stem cell laboratory? He's cloning people just to lower President Bush's poll numbers. They actually evacuated in New Orleans. All those people you see on TV floating around, those are Ray Nagin's clones.
Stop it.
I have video. I have proof of all of it.
You are more nuts than usual today. And, you
know, I don't know what that
first
means
of all,
either.
Listen, given the way Bush has treated black people in this country, they might as well be clones, my friend. Kanye West was just said out loud. Kanye West has said out loud what we've been thinking for a long time. He doesn't care about black people. You know whose house he was upset over after all was said and done? Trent Lotz, my friend. That pretty much tells you everything you need to know about his relationship with the black people. Doesn't care. He doesn't care, Lawton. Yeah, cry, you little baby.
Mark?
Yeah?
If Bush doesn't care about black people, that doesn't mean he doesn't care about my favorite singer, Charlie Pride. I have all his records on vinyl. A Sunshiny Day with Charlie Pride. The Best of Charlie Pride.
Oh,
Volume 2.
Oh.
Why does George Bush hate Charlie Pride? Kiss an angel good morning. And love her like the devil when you get back.
Just take it easy. You can't start singing Charlie Pride.
I can't handle that.
You can't stop.
I can't.
All right, just take it easy. Pull it together.
I can't.
It was a little creepy today, but just pull it together.
I...
You all right? He's really crying.
Does he hate Charlie Pride?
No, he doesn't. He probably likes Charlie Pride. You all right?
You know, this whole thing's a Democratic conspiracy.
Oh, no.
This whole thing. I can smell Clinton all over
it.
Good,
goodbye.
Got that Clinton
goodbye,
smell
Lawton.
All
goodbye,
over
Lawton.
It.
Goodbye, Lawton.
God loves you. Deal with it.
All right.
Oh, Lord.
You know, Riley. Riley.
He's scaring me from week to week over here.
That got a little too real in here. You know?
Yeah, I know.
It got a little too, I think he was really crying. You're all right, Kent?
he doesn't know who Kent
is. Oh, my God. Uh-oh. We got Stephen Colbert waiting to come out. So stick around for that. It's 14 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition, coming to you live from the new school here on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. Come on down. We got free coffee.
Morning Sedition, Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it. Eat it.
On Air America Radio.
On Air America Radio. We're broadcasting live from the new school's famous Tishman Auditorium. We're on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. We got Sarah Jones coming up momentarily. I'll do it right now. His hilarious pieces as a senior correspondent on Comedy Central's The Daily Show have earned him not only a loyal following, but also his very own show. Here's a taste of it.
Tired of news programs that only give you one side of the story or the other? Well, he'll give you neither. Tune in to The Colbert Report.
It's French, bitch.
The Colbert Report.
Where I say whatever's on my mind. And a few things that aren't.
Tired of statements backed up by research?
Then take a spin in the no-fact zone.
The Colbert Report.
Because right or wrong, I'm right. And you're wrong.
On October 17th, our next guest launches that show, The Colbert Report, which will air right after The Daily Show. Please welcome Stephen Colbert.
Yeah!
Hello, thank you. Thank you, New School.
It's good to see you, my friend.
It's lovely to see you again.
The last time I saw you was the Chevy Chase roast, and that was the worst night of my life.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was weird, wasn't it?
It was a remarkably unheartwarming affair.
To say the least. It looked like someone had forced Chevy Chase to be there.
Mm-hmm.
It was completely disastrous. So tell us about the new... Well, they made it look good, though. That's called sweetening. You were very funny. I, of course, tanked. It was horrible.
I don't remember your stuff.
Well, that's because it was...
Now you've
no, but
it.
Kevin Meaney ate it so hard.
Yes, he did worse than me.
I don't think he did terribly because Kevin Meaney did it so terrible. It was so terrible that night.
I'll tell you
that everything else got washed out of
that
my
was
brain.
When he started singing Ethel Merman, and I don't even think that made it to the final cut.
And Kevin's very funny.
A very funny guy.
Very
funny guy. 1982.
He turned to me literally as we were walking on stage. He said, "Did you prepare anything?"
A couple of weeks after that, here's the moment I had. Some guy comes up to me at a party I was in Los Angeles and goes, "Man, I saw you on the Chevy Chase roast, man. You were hilarious. That was great." And there was this weird, and I'm like, "Thanks." And he keeps looking at me and goes, "You're Stephen Colbert, right?" I'm like, "No, similar glasses at the time."
It's the glasses,
yeah.
Exactly.
So tell us about the new show.
It's going to change the world.
Well, Mark. That's good. We need that to happen.
Absolutely. We have 8 weeks. To change the world.
There you go.
That's the initial commitment from Comedy Central. And they say if we don't change the world, if there's not a marked change in the state of affairs of the entire world by Christmas, off we go. Yeah.
So how is it going to unfold?
Well,
it's a half-hour show.
It's a half-hour show. Okay. It, like, if you think of The Daily Show as like headline, like evening news kind of parody, we're O'Reilly or, you know, Scarborough or even sort of the sexiness of Anderson Cooper.
Right.
Or I love his suits, you know, and his camera angles and like the folksiness of Aaron Brown, you know, the way he mulls the news. No, there's such a rich story unfolding in New Orleans, you know. Among the tragedy down there, one can't help but not be unmoved. You know, no one mulls the news like Aaron Brown. He pre-sucks the flavor out of the news before he hands you like a little like blonde Tic Tac that he's taking the coating of flavor from the news off and hands it to you. And he's got his bookshelf. We're gonna have bookshelves. He's got bookshelves in the background to show you that he's, you know, I'm a thinker.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I've done the research. Here it all is.
We're gonna have the morning papers like he does too.
Oh, good.
But we're gonna have foreign papers, and I don't understand what any of them say. I'm guessing based on what the pictures are.
Stephen, how closely do you actually follow the news?
I don't at all.
At all. I didn't know.
I come in and I read what's on the front. I've always followed the news. You know, I've loved Aaron Brown ever since he was on ABC News overnight from 1 a.m. to 4 a.m. because I couldn't afford cable. That was where I got my news. I love the news.
So
I mean,
I actually
journalists a lot.
Uh-huh.
It's just that they're hilarious when they fall short of, you know, their own expectations.
So all the time?
All the time, all Journalists, I mean, are the people who come up to us most of all at The Daily Show and go, oh, you guys got it just right, man. You nailed us. Like, you know, we're mocking you and, you know, at all times. Yeah. But I think they all think, like, you're that other guy, not me. Yeah.
That's what everyone thinks that you're never making fun of them.
No, what's nice, though, because then you can continue to make fun of them and still get invited to their parties.
Yeah. They like this. That's what amazes me about the Daily Show is just how much people, they are flattered by the ridicule.
Yeah. Come on.
Hurt me.
Make fun of me. Hey, I've got this project I'm working on, and I think you'd find it laughable. I mean it. Like, hey, I'm doing this thing. I bet you'd really tear me a new one. Yeah, probably. But now that you know, you've taken all the joy out of it.
Now, what's this? Is this gonna put any sort of problem between you and John, or is this?
There's already a huge rift between me and John.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I mean, the Daily Show's had a good run. He's a cute guy. Don't get me wrong.
You're gonna settle this like men? Is that the idea?
In the ratings. Yeah, look, The Daily Show just hasn't taken up the responsibility of changing the world with the awesome power of basic cable, which we're going to do. No, anything that's not good for The Daily Show isn't good for me.
Oh, okay. Now you're playing the party line there. So now, does this mean that no more appearances on The Daily Show?
Still like to do This Week in God. That's the one thing.
Yeah.
I would really miss going. That's me now. That is trademarked. That's like three-peat.
Am I remembering properly when I first met you a million years ago when we both had the
Sassy.
Yeah, Sassy, Short Attention Span Theater. I killed that show, yes.
Yes. It needed.
You were living in a seminary.
I was living in the General Theological Seminary of the Episcopal Church in Chelsea, yeah.
What's that about?
God, man. Jesus loves you. Deal with it. Don't you listen to Lawton at all?
I do.
It's not all crazy.
Where do you live now, rich guy?
An undisclosed location in the New York area. A gated community. That beard would not allow you in, Mark. And I don't even want to start.
Yeah, I know. That's okay. I'm going on the Wolf Blitzer So Poor, So Black tour.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's a good
one. I mean,
one,
you know, I'm sure you guys have talked about it, but actually working on a new show, I'm kind of less topical than I used to be.
Will you hold the thought?
No.
We're with Stephen Colbert from The Daily Show and soon to be of the Colbert Report. We'll be back with Stephen Colbert momentarily. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition, coming to you live from the New School here on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. It's 27 past the hour.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. CNN's 25th anniversary, Morning Sedition is proud to present Great Moments in Journalism on CNN.
You simply get chills every time you see these poor individuals, as Jack Cafferty just pointed out, so tragically, so many of these people, almost all of them that we see, are so poor and they are so black, and this is going to raise lots of questions.
This has been Great Moments in Journalism on CNN, brought to you by Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Yeah, I got a couple questions. 34 past the hour, Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio, coming to you live from the New School here on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. Still some coffee left. Come on down. We're talking to The Daily Show, Stephen Colbert. Soon to be the Colbert Rapport shows, Stephen Colbert.
Hey, huh?
Next month. You excited? You're not freaking out yet?
No, I'm not freaking out. My wife says I'm treating this the way I treated my wedding.
Yeah.
Which is at like 5 o'clock the day up, I went, oh, oh my gosh, do something. I got to think, I have vows to write.
You waited to the last minute?
I did, the last minute. Yeah. I just, my vow just went, I'll be good.
Oh, you mean there's vows that you write at a wedding?
Did you shuffle a lot of papers to say that?
I had note cards.
So let's talk about, like, we just listened to that Wolf Blitzer, that gaffe, I guess you would call it. Now, yeah. Why has it, these guys get nervous when they actually have to cover real news, it seems. That there is no, you watch all these guys with the hurricane, they've finally found their opportunity to be real journalists again,
sure.
And they're rising to the occasion, many of them.
It's been pretty impressive, actually.
And they're
for
freaky.
The most part, yeah.
They get freaky because it's like, I'm really doing it.
Yeah. Well, I think they're shocked at the horror of the situation. I mean,
yes.
I don't want to take anything from the journalists to like go to Iraq and,
sure.
and have been in the poop there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we can't say the actual word, but, I think that people are startled that there's something that horrific going on in the United States.
Now, how have you guys handled over there at the DS there?
I haven't. What did happen down in New Orleans?
I was up at
Cape Cod for a week.
That's funny that you bring that up.
And I didn't have a TV, but let me tell you about this tragedy that happened with my lobster pot. I had a couple of big, beautiful, like two-pounders in there,
yeah.
And I'd put them up on the rocks, you know, because I didn't want to boil them. I wanted to steam them.
Yeah.
And I had them on the rocks, and I thought the rocks would hold.
Yeah.
And then I went out on the porch to have a G&T.
Yeah.
And I came back in, and the water had risen above the lobster.
Wow. Tragic.
Absolutely.
Yes,
and, you know, you know, steaming, you go 20 minutes.
Right.
Boiling, you don't want to do more than 5.
And you had no idea how long they were
I had no idea that this was happening. If I had known, I would have gone in immediately. But I had no idea that those rocks could give way underneath those lobsters.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Just horrible.
You put the rocks in for, like, the salty tank,
Sure.
You know.
So you had to throw them out, probably.
No, they were delicious. But the meat was very tough. It was a tragedy.
See, that was tremendous reporting.
Now, catch me up on New Orleans. What happened down there?
There was a storm. The president dropped the ball. FEMA dropped the ball. They left a lot of people there. Still people waiting to be helped. And it's a disaster.
That's terrible. Not good.
Yeah, it's terrible. You should tell John.
He's got people. Now Blitzer, I think the problem is it's what he rubs into his beard to keep it soft.
Something's it's being absorbed into his head.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, they've clearly been up for so long.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's funny.
You know, it's not like the situation where he does an hour and then he goes, you know, they put him back into his chamber. They've been up for so long, he's beginning to look like one of the orangutans from Planet of the Apes, you know? They're just putting layer after layer of makeup on these guys because they're so tired, and his skin has turned a brilliant orange with this just fringe of you know, glowing white.
Yeah.
You know? He looks like Dr. Zaius. I think he was just tired, you know?
Yeah. But no,
let's hope he was just,
tired. But you know what? There is no denying those people are very dark-skinned.
Oh, is that what it is?
It wasn't a pejorative. He was just pointing out that... Look, they're dark skinned. He was celebrating them.
I guess Halle Berry, there was nobody lighter than her at the thing.
So that was philosophically much like Dr. Zayas in his assumption about humans. Anyways, yeah, we'll move on.
Man is a mad animal.
He's a mad animal. Hey, you know what? I want to have an awkward silence with you.
Let's do it.
That was horrible.
I didn't get nearly awkward enough for me.
Yeah, well, we can do more of that. It's great on radio when you have dead air. Yeah. When people at home start going, is there something wrong with it?
Not everybody has the courage to put nothing out over the airwaves.
Yeah, this is true.
Well, let's stand up and do it.
We can clear our throats. to let people know that there's still a signal coming.
Oh, David.
How about O'Reilly? Yeah.
Yeah, are we done yet?
Did I derail this great conversation?
No, I think it was me. It was definitely me. That's my responsibility.
Guest, think, yeah.
So let's ask the question that people always ask. Now, why is it that it seems that comedians and people, satirists, have to sort of take the lead in breaking news and setting a tone and also just having the courage to, you know, reveal that there is something really going on and the hypocrisy in that?
I don't know. I think comedians are by nature iconoclasts, mm-hmm. you know, because they tear down status. You know, the status quo is a great big fat target.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think people go into comedy because they have that natural inclination to do so. Most of them got stomped on the throat when they were in high school.
Yeah.
So, but people who are actually in the news media are in positions of power. And so it's sort of like attacking themselves. You know,
okay.
I think generally speaking, they're part of the status quo, so they don't want to attack it.
So they're too in bed with what's
absolutely,
going on. They're playing
absolutely.
Politics and
they're playing tennis,
yeah.
not politics. They're
right.
playing tennis with those guys. And then you can't, you know, then on Monday you can't go attack them.
So you got like one guy out there, like Seymour Hersh is the only guy doing anything
right.
worthwhile.
Yeah, you're like, listen, Cheney's a good guy. I went to dinner at his house. You know, yes, this happened, but listen, his wife is so sweet. You know?
So
you know I'm being ironic, right? You people aren't that far gone, right?
No, actually, that guy is that far gone. That guy right there, he comes all the time. He's
really?
Way out there
no
on
irony?
The edge. There's
no
a couple
irony?
Other ones, yeah. So,
uh-huh.
There's a woman here also who will find something to complain about that was inappropriate in our conversation.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, it's terrific. You know, some very committed followers here mm-hmm. at the Morning's Edition where you yes. can do nothing right, and they enjoy telling you that. Like someone will come up to me after this three-hour broadcast and say, nothing on Darfur? Nothing? I got to live with that every day. Every day, the emails come. Anyways, nice to see you.
Oh, it's nice to see you, too.
I'm sorry, was I talking?
I suddenly became a listener. I was enjoying it. I was in my car in my driveway saying, I should go into work.
With your driver. I like how you threw that in.
Yeah, really. Okay.
My driveway. My driveway, man.
Okay,
I'm
all right.
Driver.
I'm sorry.
It's basic cable.
It's okay. I'm not. Yeah. Look, when the show starts October 17th.
Yeah.
And
October.
October 17th. Colbert Report.
Right.
Stephen Colbert, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
From The Daily Show. We will be back momentarily with Sarah Jones. You're listening to Morning's Edition, coming to you live from the New School on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. You can still come down if you're in the neighborhood, 42 Paseawa.
Morning's Edition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition here on Air America Radio. We're broadcasting live from the new school here at 12th Street, just a little east of 6th Avenue. You guys have been a great audience. I appreciate y'all coming down here. Our next guest is an Obie Award-winning playwright, actor, and poet. Her one-woman play, Bridge and Tunnel, wowed audiences here in New York and across the nation last year, and it's making its way to Broadway next year. We're pleased to welcome Sarah Jones.
Yeah.
Hey. Good morning.
That's congratulations on that. That's amazing.
Thank you very much. I'm very excited.
You're going all the way to Broadway. I mean, the first time I met you, we were at the Aspen Comedy Festival in 2000, and you've come so far. That's congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Are you excited?
Yes, I'm excited. I think Broadway is, you know, for people who do what I do character work.
Yes.
You know, lots of different personalities come out of me, especially in the morning when I don't have much of one myself yet. So I will let one of them tell you how we feel about going to Broadway.
Okay.
So for those of you who can't see on the radio, I'm just putting on my glasses so I can see the people who are here. Good morning. Good morning to all of you. Thank God there's still some people who get up in the morning, like Mark and the rest of you.
Are you my grandmother?
Well, no, but listen, Sarah Jones hasn't seen this hour of the day. I don't even want to tell you. She's a very nice young girl. She's a black girl. She calls herself black. She's really more like a caramel color if you see her in person. But regardless, she's a very nice young girl. I think she deserves to go to Broadway. And if she can just keep the language to a minimum, you know, because they don't like that there when you go uptown. But she's excited, and we're excited to see you all here. We want you both there. And yes. That's Stephen Colbert. He's a nice young man. He should come to the show.
He sounds exactly like my Grandma Goldie.
Oh. Well, you know, I'm available for certain kinds of social dates. I'm a modern older lady, if you know what I mean.
Here's what my Grandma Goldie said after I did my HBO special. She called me up. She goes, you know, Mark, it was filthy.
And I didn't see it, but it probably was. I wasn't there, but I can imagine.
So now, is this you in the show?
Yes, my name is Lorraine Levine. Thank you for asking, dear. I am going to be in the show, and Sarah makes me work for nothing, but even so, I think it's important to do what I do. I like to spread joy to people, and you don't see a lot of older people on the stage. We fill the seats, but do they put us up on the stage? Almost never. They only want the girls in the bikinis, and we all shook up. You know, I shake, but it's not with the Elvis. I have a little palsy in the right hand. You know, so why shouldn't we be there? We pay. We should also enjoy. You know, so I'm there for you all who are older.
Thank you for stopping by.
You're welcome, Bubby. It's good to see you both.
Good to see you.
Yes. Okay.
So how many characters do you do in the show? I know it's probably a question you get a lot, but that seems to impress people.
Yes. There are 14 characters in Bridge and Tunnel, male and female, and they're from all over the world.
Now, I want to come see the show. Tell me what to expect from the show when I come see it on Broadway. I mean, what is it about? I mean, I know what Bridge and Tunnel means.
Yeah.
Because in my business, it's not necessarily a good thing, because a lot of times it's used in a sort of derogatory way, like when you're like, is the crowd good? Well, they're a Bridge and Tunnel crowd.
But see, that's why I called it that, because it's subversive. I am from Queens.
All right.
I have driven over, you know, bridges and through tunnels my entire life. And it was always like, oh, we got to go to the city if we want to be cool. Everything cool happens in the city, the city, the city, the city. So I've decided to sort of reclaim the pride in being a person from an outer borough or New Jersey or, you know, one of these other wonderful overlooked places that people think are at the margins, but really we're where it's happening.
Oh,
And so, yes, of course.
Riley's from New Jersey.
Yeah. Great place, New Jersey.
It's a great place.
I was born in New Jersey.
It's a wonderful thing. Let's all, you know, exalt this wonderful thing.
Dad Pashman was born in New Jersey. Oh, my God, there's a lot
of
Jersey.
We can have a roll call in here right now. Who's from Jersey?
Yeah.
There you go. Where Brooklyn at, as my friends would say. There are a couple of Brooklynites. Here you go. So, you know, we're all representing in here, and I think that Broadway needs to acknowledge the beauty of the outer.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. So who's producing the show, and how's that unfolding? What theater is it going to be at?
I have many exciting secrets, but let's just say that the last time I did the show off-Broadway, I had the incredible luck to have Meryl Streep be my supporter and one of my presenters. And that was pretty much like having somebody say, I'm giving you what you've always asked for. Now you're going to die, but you'll be happy, so don't worry. You know, that was incredible, having somebody who's as brilliant as she
is. Isn't she amazing? Like, every time I see Meryl Streep, I'm, like, amazed. I'm like, she's, like, the best actor that ever lived.
Pretty much.
It's just mind-blowing that so many people that are in entertainment now just stink.
Yeah, that's mind-blowing. But even if they didn't stink, she would still be, you know,
the best.
Incredible. Yeah, and the fact that there is so much stinkage just raises her to this other level of, like, luminosity. I mean, it's ridiculous.
So, you know, I love her, and she's a great supporter. So we're figuring out what the next steps will look like now. We're just ironing out all the details.
Well, that's awesome. So what? Who else are you bringing to that show with you? What are their, who's your favorite character to play? What do you got?
Well, I don't really have favorites because they're like my children. I love them all equally. But, you know, I have, there's a bunch of different characters, faces that I think are, you know, underrepresented in the larger culture for various reasons. But there's one whose name is Miss Lady, who's very relevant now. She's based on a homeless person that I met. And, you know, since people are now aware again that there's poverty in this country, she, I feel like her voice is, you know, especially, well, you know, sad on to talk your ear off if you let her. So my name is Miss Lady. I just want to talk for myself, because don't nobody want to let me talk for myself. Just because I don't look beautiful, you know, I don't have my teeth the way I used to, but I used to be a pretty little thing. You used to didn't want to let me sit next to Mark, because he wouldn't be able to keep his hand to himself. But he's behaving himself now.
Yeah.
But, you know, poor people, when did it become a crime to be poor and such a virtue to be Donald Trump or Paris Hilton or Bush, for that matter? When did that become, you know, the standard for how Americans want to view themselves? You know, oh, the less I've done and the more I spent, the better human being I am. That's ridiculous. So I've done worked hard my whole life, you know. And like I said, it's a whole lot of homeless people in this country. We human beings, too.
Are you angry?
Am I angry? Why are you going to do that? I'm trying to be pleasant. It's early in the morning. I'm trying to sit here with a positive vibe and a positive attitude. You're going to ask me. No, but I am angry. Thank you for asking me. I am. I'm pissed off. It's high time. We recognize all the 45 million people that ain't got no health insurance. People dying in the United States of America for no reason. It's ridiculous. I'm tired of it. So, Miss Lady for president. That's what
there
I
you go.
All right. Our guest is Sarah Jones, and the many manifestations of Sarah Jones. So we know exactly where the theater, which theater it's going to open or when it's going to open?
We don't know which theater yet. We do know it will be in February, most likely. That is Black History Month. I am a black woman. We want to make some black women's history.
Okay, there you go.
And what are you doing in between then and now? You got anything you want to plug or invite people to?
Well, in between then and now, people can check sarahjonesonline.com. It's SARAHJONES online, all one word, .com. And I will tell you where I'm going to be. I will be doing a show. I actually have another show that I wrote as a commission to talk about health and healthcare and poverty and all of that uplifting stuff that we want to talk about. But it's fair. It's real.
Yes,
so I want to address
absolutely.
It. Have a good time talking about it. And I'm doing that in Boston at Northeastern University on September 22nd. But people can check the website, sarahjonesonline.com, for more details.
Sarah Jones, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming. Oh, there's hang out a minute. You can stay here. There's the sound of the fact machine. That's our liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. So here are your weekly marching orders. Here we go. One, sail to Louisiana with the world's first floating voter registration table. Two, play the blame game, mostly just because Scott McClellan keeps saying not to. Three, point out that Condoleezza Rice may have been shopping for shoes while New Orleans flooded, but the shoes were probably pumps, and New Orleans needs pumps right now. Do so with sarcasm. I read that weird. Four, this weekend on the anniversary of 9/11, call all your liberal friends and thank them for not becoming a fascist 4 years ago. And five, on your website, post a photo of Barbara Bush lounging at Kenny Bunkport with the caption, quote, "This is working out very well for her." End quote. Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Bush is promising to rebuild Trent Lott's house. Wake up, sheeple. His compassion starts at seven figures.
Uh-oh.
I want to send out thank yous to the New School, Tracy Jackson, Malcolm Brown, Carolyn Oyama, Bob Carey, and everyone else at the New School that made this possible.
Yeah.
And our crew, Lucy, David, Neil, Gerald, Chip, Juan, Matt, Terry, and Kalo. Thank you, Sarah Jones.
Thank you, Sarah Jones.
Mark Riley, have a great weekend, my friend.
You too. And you know who we got coming up next week?
Who's that, man?
Harry Reams.
Oh, man.
Yes. Harry Reams.
Hey, it was liberal a long time ago to be all sexy and weird and sell it.
Oh, was that what it was?
Yeah. So we got Harry Reams, and I'm going to be at the Comedy Cellar this weekend.
All right.
If you want to come see me Friday and Saturday. Have a great weekend. It's Air America Radio's Morning Tradition, 57 past the hour. Good morning.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.